From WGCU, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. A new study looking at every county in Florida paints a grim picture for women living in the Sunshine State. The Institute for Women's Policy Research says more Florida women live in poverty and lack access to education. But the study also has some good news, especially when it comes to women owning their own businesses. Coming up, we talk with the people behind the study and local people working to help women right here in our area. And a Naples wine expert has joined an elite level of professionals in the world of wine, qualifying as a certified level 3 sommelier. He'll talk about what it took to earn this distinction, and we'll talk about the increasingly influential world of wine in Southwest Florida. Plus, we'll talk with a local wine distributor about what's on trend to serve this holiday season and what wine to watch in 2017. First, the news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Southwest Florida is an increasingly global power in the wine world. Ahead on the program, we'll talk with a newly certified Level 3 sommelier from Naples who talks about the hard work that goes into passing such an elite test. And we'll talk with other wine professionals about what to serve this holiday season and what trends to watch in the world of wine in 2017. But first, when it comes to the welfare of women in Florida, the Sunshine State gets a D+. A new report from the Institute for Women's Policy Research found more women live in poverty and without access to health insurance than anywhere else in the nation. Florida also fell behind other states when it came to a woman's access to education and economic opportunity. Here to talk about that this statewide assessment found in our area is Brenda Tate with the Women's Foundation of Southwest Florida. Welcome, Brenda.
Thank you, Julie.
And joining us by phone today to look at the broader picture of what this study says about Florida and the nation is Julie Anderson from the Institute for Women's Policy Research, the organization that authored the study. Thanks for joining us, Julie.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
We are talking about opportunities for women in Florida. What do you see in Southwest Florida? What's working and what isn't when it comes to women in the Sunshine State? Your thoughts at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Florida gets a D+ overall when it comes to the status of women in all 67 counties. Julie Anderson, you're with the Institute for Women's Policy Research, the organization that put the study together. If D+ is the grade on our report card, we can extend that metaphor a little bit and ask, what classes did we take to earn such a grade?
Well, the components that go into that grade are health insurance coverage rate, the share of women who have a bachelor's degree or higher, the poverty rate for women in the state, and business ownership. We think those four factors together kind of paint a good picture about poverty and opportunity, these interconnected facts that relate to women's security in each state. And the D+ is not so good.
Yeah, no, it's not. And Brenda, in the Southwest Florida area, did our region also share in that D+? Are we doing better or worse than the rest of the state as a whole?
Julie, we absolutely share in the D+. In fact, in some of the areas, we do even worse.
Really? What areas?
You know, the one that concerns me most is the lack of educational attainment for women in our region. You know, we show that over 600,000 women call Southwest Florida their home, yet fewer than 1 in 5 of those women over age 25 have earned a bachelor's degree.
And that's the project that your foundation is working with?
We're developing solutions, but this is the information that came straight out of the Status of Women report.
That's really surprising. What's even more shocking, Julie, this data is up to the year 2014, and it's compared to a similar study that was done a decade ago, and we also got a rating of D+. So we made zero progress?
Well, there, as I said, these four factors go into it. So some things are a little better, some things are a little bit worse, but overall, it just hasn't moved the needle in a significant way for women.
Did we go up and down during that time period?
Yeah, so the number of women getting bachelor's degrees, I think we know nationally, is increasing. But in Florida, it's a little different than the trend. In most states, women are out-earning men in the number of bachelor's degrees they get. But in Florida, the reverse is true. I don't really know what goes into that, but I think, as Brenda points out, that's a concerning lag, because we know education really is such a protective factor for things like having health insurance, avoiding poverty, avoiding unemployment. So some of the elements that have improved, though, I would point to are business ownership, which has just increased like crazy in the state of Florida. And so that's a bright spot. But, of course, we see policies to make that sort of more effective and more stable for women who want to make that leap.
Well, Florida is an economy that relies on small businesses, and this is one area where, as you said, we're seeing some encouraging data. The report finds that Florida had the fourth highest growth rate of businesses owned by women. Way to go. Hendry County leads the state in the small businesses run by women, but our region also has counties that are near the bottom for female entrepreneurs, like Charlotte County, which ranks 61st. Brenda, we were talking earlier, it's great news to have more women owning businesses, but you were talking about the overall impact of that.
The numbers are encouraging. The rate of ownership to increase is very encouraging. However, we're concerned that the economic clout of these businesses owned by women are not sufficient. We're not seeing the increased revenues. We're not seeing these small businesses, you know, hire more employees. The things you would look at where you would measure the success and the economic clout. So we'd love to see more emphasis placed on supporting women who want to either start or expand their business, have access to capital, and also access to training and things like what does it take to attract government contracts.
Well, and so the kind of businesses that are being opened by women, did the study look at what type of businesses these are? Because sometimes you're an independent contractor and you're considered an entrepreneur because you're freelancing because you can't find a job. So maybe the entrepreneurship is a single person just striking it out on their own.
Right.
Right. That's correct.
And so what you're discussing, Julie, is encouraging ways to get the state to try to help provide some sort of stimulus for larger scale entrepreneurship?
Yeah, I think just in general, in many ways, in areas like business ownership, like in politics, we understand that there are networks where people tend to advise those who are closest to them. And so in some ways, that's leaving women out of that sort of informal information network. And so there need to be sort of more concerted effort to educate women on what it takes to write a business plan, to seek out capital and successfully gain it, and then to sort of make that leap to grow the business from maybe it's just a single employee, the woman herself, to expand to the number of employees, to expand the business outreach, and hopefully to grow revenue. Because, you know, starting a business is only one piece, but we need it to sort of succeed and thrive.
And then add employees and continue to contribute to region and the society. So I want to take a closer look at what this report says about women in poverty. The report says that more women in Florida live in poverty today at 15% than in 2014 when we were at 12%. What's the difference between that 1 year? How can it have jumped 3% in 1 year?
I think it's comparing over the decade.
Okay.
And that it increased over the decade. Unfortunately, poverty among women is on the rise in every state in the nation and in the U.S. overall. So, you know, I think there are a number of factors contributing to that. Poverty varies widely by type of household. We know that there are many more households that have sort of women as a sole earner. And so things like the wage gap are really, really impacting the stability of those families and leaving more people in poverty. Low health insurance coverage rates can again, threaten that stability and lead to higher rate of poverty. So there are many factors that are making poverty actually on the rise, a persistent problem in Florida and across the country.
Well, how do you define poverty? I mean, and at what dollar level are we talking about? And then how is that different? If you have a woman living on her own, at what point is she in poverty? And then if you have a woman with three people in the household?
Right. So poverty is exactly defined by the members of the household. So there are different thresholds depending on sort of how many people are relying on, how many dependents are in a household. And actually, with much of this data, we're following the U.S. government poverty thresholds and guidelines for those factors.
So less than $20,000 a year is poverty? If you have
Not sure. Yeah, I don't have the number in front of me for what the poverty rate is in Florida, but
and yeah, does that change state to state? I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but does that change state to state? Like, is Florida's poverty level different from Alabama's?
No, it's a federal poverty threshold, and there are good measures that sort of look at more nuanced factors, but you know those are complicated to keep up to date because they include things like fluctuating housing costs, cost of living, things that can change sort of dramatically from one state to the next. So for consistency's sake, we're looking at every state compared to federal poverty thresholds.
Well, I know in our microcosm down here in Southwest Florida, $20,000 a year is not going to get you very far if you have anybody in the house with you, or even if you're on your own 100%. Brenda, focusing on our area, what can we take away from this type of an assessment?
Well, I think if we look at the federal poverty guidelines, which, and Julie's correct, they do vary depending on the size of the family. But generally, because of the, and this is a broad statement, but because of the cost of living in our area, I would suggest that you would have to earn twice the federal poverty guidelines to even get close to a living wage in Southwest Florida.
Wow. So you have to make twice what is federally
generally
considered to be poverty. Mm-hmm. So you have to double what poverty level is to be able to just kind of get by.
That's correct.
This is Gulf Coast Live. We're talking about a new report that gives Florida a D-plus for the status of women across the state. Call in with your thoughts and what you think Florida could do better. With your reactions, you can call us at 877-428-8255 or 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Julie, this study draws a strong link between poverty and the wage gap in Florida, the difference in pay that a woman makes compared to a man for doing the same work with the same experience. You say that women in Florida earn 86 cents to every dollar a man earns, yet the national rate, women earn roughly 77 cents for every dollar. It sounds like Florida is doing better than the national rate, but can you explain that?
Sure. Yeah, the wage gap in Florida is smaller because men's wages in the state are fairly low. So because the gap is comparing women's earnings with men's earnings, sometimes that can be a little deceptive. You know, it's great when the wage gap narrows, but we never want that happening because men are earning less and less, and so women are catching up to a fairly low bar. What we want is improvement for both men and women and closing the wage gap through positive means, not because men's wages are stagnating and women's wages are creeping up ever so slowly. So, yeah, it's a little counterintuitive that in some states with relatively low earnings for both men and women, that gap can be smaller.
Well, and Brenda, you can probably attest to this, too. Florida has a lot of low-wage jobs.
We have so many jobs in the service industry, and this is where we tie back to the the level of earnings in Florida compared to the poverty rate, and then our tie back to the lack of educational attainment or training, even training for vocations that will pay a living wage.
Well, there's a lot of service industry, and then when you have a lot of people that are working at that bottom tier level, there's not a little minimum wage is minimum wage.
That's right.
But when you get into the higher tiers, when you have people that are educated and they're going into professions like doctors, lawyers, I'm just naming off a few, but is that differentiation in pay the same, or is it further apart?
We often find that the wage gap is greater the higher the level of education. So if you're going to compare women with a bachelor's degree or higher with men with a bachelor's degree or higher, that gap will be greater. So that's discouraging. But I think if we just simply look at an individual woman, obviously every level of education that she earns raises her earnings. So we have to sort of tackle those separately. Education is a very important avenue. But where we really see that the wage gap exists and is a persistent problem is the fact that women seem to be doing all the right things, but that gap even widens the higher level of education she has.
Well, when we talk about education, Southwest Florida has some unique statistics which pointed out earlier, roughly 1 in 3 women nationwide have college degrees, but here it's closer to 1 in 4, 1 in 5. Is that what you mentioned earlier?
We show that in Southwest Florida, and this is our 5-county area, mm-hmm. Collier, Lee, Henry, Glades, and Charlotte, that it's less than 1 in 5. So we're not even doing as well as the rest of the state of Florida.
That's a particular fall down for us. But speaking of solutions, with the Women's Foundation of Southwest Florida, there's a program that's targeted at trying to help women achieve more when it comes to education. You say it's an education savings match. Can you tell me about that?
Sure. We have a match savings for education program where we're targeting hardworking but women who are earning money but falling short. And we want to help them secure funds for their education. So, for example, an income-qualified woman can come to us, save $500. We will match that with $4,000. These funds will go directly into her student account at the school of her choice. And this could be a school that would provide her with a 2-year certificate for a vocation. It could be for her undergraduate degree, even graduate work. So we're excited to be able to bring this program for the first time to Southwest Florida. And we literally have women coming into our program, meeting our criteria, and opening their savings accounts as we speak.
Oh, well, so this just started?
Yes, this just started this fall.
This fall, and it's already getting going. So, I mean, like cosmetology, maybe?
That's correct. Cosmetology.
Or accounting.
Accounting.
It can go anywhere.
You know, nurse's aide, whatever career goal these women have, we want to support that with the funding to get them going or to complete their program and to complete their programs on time.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about some of the people that have come to the program so far that have been signing up.
Well, so far we have students who are already enrolled in the local universities in our area from Hodges, Florida Southwestern, Florida FGCU. We also have women who are coming and enrolling who have an interest in securing their certification for cosmetology. So they will be going to a school like Paul Mitchell, et cetera, in the area. There's just a wide variety, and we're just thrilled to see, you know, these women, these hardworking women, come in, qualify, get going, start their savings. We also require that they take a financial literacy training class as a prerequisite, and already we're seeing the benefits of that training come into play.
I don't think that's taught anymore in schools.
No, it's not taught anymore in schools.
I think it was home economics,
that's
correct?
Right. That's why we require it as part of our program. And again, we provide it free. It's a self-paced program and already seeing positive results for our clients as a result.
Well, that's a pretty quick turnaround. We have a caller on the phone, Zach from Fort Myers. Zach, what's your question?
Yeah, I've worked in the staffing industry for about a year and a half, and I was just wondering, as a male who has a little bit of influence, what can I do to help support this from a ground level?
That's a good question. Are there any ways that men can become partners in trying to help?
Absolutely. You know, here at the Women's Foundation, we exist to elevate the status of women and girls in Southwest Florida. But we partner, you know, we have men and women who join with us, who care about these issues and either donate funds, volunteer their time, you know, just check in with me after the show, Zach, and I'll make sure that we can find a place for you to participate. We'd love to have you on board.
And also we'll have links to the study and all of the organizations that we're talking about on our website at wgcunews.org. Another thing that came out in this study was access to health insurance is another area where Florida appears to lag way behind other states. In fact, this study finds Florida women who are not elderly ranked dead last in the country when it comes to having health insurance. The national coverage rate is at 85%. We're at 78% of women being covered, up from 73% before. So why do you think that is, Julie?
Yeah, that's a very concerning thing. What we find is a large number of women in Florida are in that insurance coverage gap that was created. So we sometimes hear about the Medicaid expansion. Some states agreed to do that, and Florida was one that declined to expand Medicaid. And Florida alone accounts for 20% of the nation's individuals who are in the coverage gap. So that is just not moving the trend in the right direction there. Health insurance obviously contributes to better health, but it also can avoid these unexpected and very high costs that can sometimes bankrupt families. It's very, very threatening to economic security for women and their families. And, you know, ultimately these things impact whole communities. So, yeah, the health insurance coverage rate is a concerning component of what we look at as economic stability.
Well, we did have a program last week about the people that fall into that gap, and that's the gap where you earn so little money that you cannot get a subsidized plan through the Affordable Care Act. So
exactly.
They kind of get
right.
Left out, and then they also make too much money to qualify for Medicaid. So that's where those people are falling into that gap. However, also from that show, there were record numbers of people that were enrolling for the Affordable Care Act last week. So maybe these numbers will budge a little bit.
So
because these were based on 2014-15, so maybe that will change by the end of this year when the final numbers come in.
Right. Yes, we've seen improvement in the past year. So over the past decade, looking back, it's not as good. But, you know, the Affordable Care Act has not been fully implemented for very long. So that is something to watch more closely year to year because numbers are improving.
When we look at the entire state of Florida, Julie, are we seeing the needle move at all when it comes to helping women access higher education and training?
Well, as I said, it's one of the few states that sort of defies the trend where women are not earning. And we think the focus really needs to be on, when we look at women by race and ethnicity, sometimes some of these things are disguised. And so we think real effort to reach out to women of color for scholarship opportunities, for education about potential jobs in their area that are growing and that have the potential to have a living wage. We just think there's not enough discussion about potential earnings and pathways and scholarship opportunities for women. So there is a way forward, and I think it's vitally important for the economy of the state that we bring more women along in Florida.
When we talk about a woman living in poverty, it obviously means they don't have as much money as they need to get by, but there's also a strong link of women in poverty and a greater risk of domestic violence and sex trafficking. Does your study explore how poverty impacts women when it comes to other problems, like being a victim of violence or being homeless, things like that?
We are looking at that in this particular study, but you're right that it is linked to many other kinds of vulnerability. So it's linked to women's health, women's mortality rates, the vulnerability to violence. All kinds of factors are tied together. And so, you know, we're happy that we're looking at a series of reports, and we'll be able to draw those connections. So this first one is focused on the set of issues we're talking about today, where we're going to be able to tie that to things like health outcomes and violence and the sort of vulnerability. Because women are economically insecure, they may leave themselves in dangerous situations longer than if they had sort of a stable life of their own where they felt capable of sort of caring for themselves and their children and wouldn't allow themselves to stay in a situation that's threatening to them. So those connections are all there, and we're looking forward to sort of more data by county and being able to unpack some of those connections.
Brenda, are you seeing something regarding this also with the Women's Foundation?
Absolutely. The Women's Foundation has been very involved the past few years in exploring ways to secure reliable data around the crime of human trafficking in our region. It is a problem that's serious. It defies quantification at this point. So we're hoping that by the time the next phase of our status of women in Florida by county is released, that we will have some reliable data coming out of Florida that is on a county level that can actually be incorporated into the reports. The relationship between vulnerability, economic instability, and that creating vulnerability is
desperation and survival.
It is. So it absolutely links to human trafficking and other crimes against the most vulnerable people in our population.
I mean, they're already totally poor, have a lot of pressures on them. They may have a family at home. It's a very precarious position to be in as far as being able to be victimized.
That's right.
And there are people out there willing to take advantage.
Absolutely.
And we see busts every once in a while, and it's just heartbreaking to know that that happens so frequently.
Well, as you know, Florida is known as the third in the United States as far as the rate of human trafficking activity. So we can't turn a blind eye to this. It happens right here in our own backyard.
It really does.
It really does.
It's surprising. Every time you see something in the news about it, it's like, really? How can that be? It's just kind of – it's hard to believe, and it's also – it's not hard to – it's hard to believe. It is. It's hard to believe, and it's also hard to believe that we're still getting a D-plus after 10 years, and we haven't moved at all.
I agree.
I want to ask you, and then now we'll go into dreamland, if you could change anything to improve the welfare of women in Southwest Florida, what would that thing be? What would you like to see happen if all your dreams could come true for women?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, we've talked about education and training and how powerful that can be when you have the credentials to earn a good, not just a living wage, but a wage that will allow you to thrive and support your family. That would be huge. So, you know, access to opportunities for education and training. And we talked about boosting women-owned businesses and how can we build that economic clout when everyone benefits when we do that. I would also love for us to see in Florida greater representation of women around the tables where decisions are being made. Still in Southwest Florida, we've never had a woman represent us in Congress. I'd love to see that change in my lifetime. I'd love to see, you know, more women around the corporate board tables where those policy decisions are being made. The last stat I had on that is that maybe somewhere around 10% of all the corporate boards in Southwest Florida, fewer than 10% are held by women. So these are where the policy decisions are made. And if we don't have women in those elected and appointed positions, things are just going to be
same old, same old.
Same old, same old.
Mm-hmm. Status quo. Julie, the same question about the state on the statewide level. What's the one thing that we could address to improve the status of life of women in Florida?
Oh, I have trouble giving one answer. You know, I agree with everything that Brenda said, and I think that we can't be ignoring the equal pay piece. And the reason that I think it's growing in importance is because more and more families are absolutely relying on women's earnings. Either she's the only earner supporting a household, or even in married couple families, more and more families, the woman's earnings are not like they used to be in the old days, some sort of luxuries, nice to have. I mean, people cannot survive without two people earning in their household. So that wage gap is not a women's issue. It's become an issue for families. It's become an issue for whole communities. And we've done some analysis that shows that if women were paid the same as comparable men, it would have a dramatic impact on poverty. In Florida, we estimate it would cut poverty among working women in half. So I just think that is probably the single policy that has the potential to have a massive impact. And think about all the women that would no longer need public assistance, that would then be sort of able to support themselves and their family, which I think is a goal that many people have.
I just want to put a little bow on that. You said that if women were given the equal pay to men, it would bring 50% of women out of poverty.
Among working women. So these are women who are working. We're not looking at women who aren't in the labor force. Among working women, it would cut poverty in half. So that does sort of feel like a real magic wand. And even though there are equal pay laws on the books, they can be enforced, they can be improved. And I think that alone would go a long, long way.
Most certainly would. Well, we will have to leave it there for now. Thank you to our guest, Brenda Tate, with the Women's Foundation of Southwest Florida, and on the phone, Julie Anderson with the Institute for Women's Policy Research in D.C. Thank you both for joining us today. Coming up, tis the season for festivity, and for many, that means wine will be on the table. Up next, we talk with two local wine professionals about what's on trend here in Southwest Florida and what to look for in 2017. We'll be right back.